Yeah, that's how it got started. There were no savings groups. We didn't Hope did not start the savings group model until probably 2010.
Well, the cool thing about that story is not only did she get to the point where she could provide for her family, but she was able to be generous within her community.
What makes the biggest difference, because it was her home. She had saved for it. It wasn't this huge humanitarian aid.
One of the things that I think that makes you in particular so unique is the fact that you have donated a massive percentage of your business. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Jeff Root. He's the CEO of Keystone Custom Homes and the founder and board chair of Hope International. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about Hope? We've had you guys on the show a couple times now, but especially coming from the founder, I'd love to hear how the organization got started.
Yeah. Well, let me first, I'll give you a little bit of just a short background on myself. Grew up on a dairy farm in southern Lancaster County. 10 years old, my dad taught me the value of hard work, getting up at 4 a.m. and the value of discipline, which I appreciated. Years later, didn't appreciate it that much then, but it kind of came from a little bit of a dysfunctional family. My mom picked up my three siblings at school one day and left me a note and said, "Hey, here's a phone number if you want to join me." My dad needed a lot of help on the dairy farm. I just decided, at 13 to join my dad. Spent my teenage years kind of broken, but working hard and also leaning into my faith in Jesus. At 20, I literally bought the farm before I knew what that meant. Got married a couple years later. My wife and I actually took care of 300 cows. Turns out 300 bovines are very needy. So at that point, we were really looking to get into some kind of short-term mission trips and a lot of different things related to missions. I had been involved in a lot at our church at a young age. So we decided to move into something other than dairy farming. We were looking for something with lower risk and less hours. So we thought maybe real estate and home building would be a good choice. Spent a lot of time on our knees praying through that time because we didn't really see clear direction and weren't really feeling like God was answering necessarily the questions we were asking and what we were praying for. But moved ahead. I was asked to lead a trip to Ukraine around that time to send containers of food and medical supplies to a church struggling through depression right after the fall of the Soviet Union, so mid-90s. And we had sent five containers of food and medical supplies to our sister church there in Ukraine through the Slavic Gospel Mission, but had noticed that there was a trend of what Robert Lupton in his book Toxic Charity now talks about, that toxic charity trend where that first gift, there's appreciation, then anticipation, then expectation, then entitlement, and then dependency. And our pastor at our church, I'll never forget, Leonid Petrenko, Zaporozhye, Ukraine, sat me down at the dinner table one night there in Ukraine and said, "Your helping is hurting." And that one comment shifted our whole approach. We started looking for ways to help people help themselves. We went on several journeys that were failures, but eventually ended up on a concept that allowed us to invest very small amounts of capital, as low as $20, into the lives of the families we were looking to serve to help them grow financially, personally, spiritually, and socially. And that has grown to what you see Hope International has grown to today. Peter Greer, our president and CEO, has led us to, in addition to writing 16 books and brilliantly leading Hope, he has helped grow the organization to now 27 countries. We do small savings groups and very tiny loans, but we've raised about $280 million, but have loaned out over $1.75 billion, partly because of the 98% repayment rate. We've now partnered with about 14,000 churches around the world in our small savings groups. We have what they call the 5W savings groups. They're the welcome, worship, word, work, and wrap up.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an incredible legacy. I want to step back a little bit. One of the things that you said as you were sharing your story kind of piqued my interest. Talk to me about that period of your life, you and your wife, where you guys were on your knees praying, you're seeking guidance from the Lord, and you didn't feel like you were getting many answers. It sounded like you guys moved forward without having some of those answers, and you just stepped out in faith. Like, what was that period of life like?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of uncertainty, and I can tell you that there were years that went by, a lot of years. It was actually not until probably 15 years later. I remember, you know, through some of the early successes at our building company. So, you know, 92, we had started Keystone Custom Homes, and that had grown. And we had, by that point, we had become the first builder in the country to win the America's Best Builder Award 3 times. But more to your question, at Hope International, we had seen Natasha in Ukraine get a small loan for a clothing store. Or not a store, but more like a stall at a farmer's market. And mm-hmm. she got a small loan. But after noticing a need in the farmer's market for someone to have a better location to sell Portland cement, she noticed that the person selling Portland cement was in the center of the market. And she thought, you know what, if somebody set this up out at the curbside, they would do so much better. So she did it. So she had clothing and concrete. Not your, you know, two most common things together, but I remember hearing Paul Marty, our director of the ministry at that time, said to me, this Natasha came to pay her last loan off after 18 months. She said, this is my last loan payment and I won't be needing any more loans because I'm not poor anymore. Hmm. And we were also encouraged by hearing from our loan officer in Kigali, Rwanda, talking about two Muslim women who were so excited about the success of their tiny sneaker businesses. And they were growing because of the small loans, because of the training, because of the solidarity of the group, teaching them, you know, basic business principles. But they would sit outside during the word and the worship part of our meetings on the porch, which is okay. You know, we don't, you know, force anyone in. We want to love them in. But these two Muslim women ended up getting loved in, first by the loan officer and then the other believers in the group. And by the end of that loan cycle, those two Muslim women came to Christ through that process. And then the third one I remember thinking through during that time was Anastasia from Burundi. Bujumbura, Burundi, was not able to send her two little girls to school at the time. But she leveraged a $20 loan into a wedding rental business where she bought 20 chairs. They were a dollar a piece. So think, you know, she got a $20 loan, think like 4 cups of Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And she was not interested in toxic charity. She wanted to be able to pay it back. But fast forward to today, Anastasia started with those 20 chairs. She now has 200 chairs, 200 place settings and 200 baskets and 3 wedding dresses, small, medium, and large, that she leases out to couples getting married. And she's just thriving. But I remember thinking about all of this and all of a sudden it just registered to me. This was the answer to our prayer 15 years earlier, that we were seeking God's direction and guidance and saying, you know, we were thinking very small in the context of, we weren't thinking about any of this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we were thinking about, how could we have a dairy farm without the dairy? That's where we were. But God had much bigger plans, and it was truly a good lesson for me, and still is today. I mean, to be honest, I still like answers to my prayers in 15 minutes, not 15 mm-hmm. years. But it was a good lesson, and there were some times that we really struggled with direction during those years, but we just tried to put one foot in front of the other, continue to seek wisdom, direction, and, guidance from the Lord.
But throughout that season, was he always giving you enough direction, like just the next step, or was it complete silence during that period? Like, what did that look like? I ask because, like, this is much more of a personal question for me as I lead my ministry, and like you have these seasons where, like, gosh, I don't feel like I have any direction from the Lord. What do I do next? And so that's kind of really why I'm asking is like, in those seasons where it does seem like a drought to the answers we're seeking, like, what are some of the things that you learned through those periods?
Yeah. I'm often reminded if you look through the course of biblical history, God uses a lot of broken people, and he also uses sometimes of drought and hardship to, you know, James 1:2-5, considered all pure joy, I think it says, in NIV, when you face trials of many kinds, and it builds character and true wisdom. And I think I'm not sure if it's, you know, I had a pretty dysfunctional teenage season and a pretty rough, those 10 years on the dairy farm running that, you know, with 300 bovines, there was a lot of character building.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I would say there was never clear, there was no like audible voice, like, start Hope International. You'll be in 27 countries in 27 years. And
you know, right.
We were looking very small, and there were times of discouragement. There were times of doubt and times of, for sure, our peers and those around us just saying, what are you doing?
Yeah. And at that time, Hope did it look from the beginning like it looks now with regards to microfinance and small savings loans? Or did it start out as something entirely different than that?
Yes, a good question. So sending the containers of food and medical supplies was pre-Hope. Then there was a small season in there where we actually bought a sunflower seed processor, and with a small business plan that unfortunately was written in English and they didn't read English. in Zaporozhye, Ukraine. Our whole thing was, okay, the containers didn't work. How about if we set up this sunflower seed processor? We did all this research and the business plan on, there was a ton of sunflower seed processing opportunities there. We set it up with a guy, you know, got it delivered, had the whole plan, went back a year later and it hadn't been touched. So there's a whole nother story about that failure. But following that is when we kind of stumbled on this idea of Christ-centered microfinance, saw it working in other parts of the world, you know, prayed through it, just did a lot of research on, you know, a lot of people told us it couldn't be done. But that was the beginning of the microfinance piece was, right there in 97, very small, you know, 12 loans of $500 each, Zaporozhye, Ukraine. And, that's how it got started. There were no savings groups. Hope did not start the savings group model until probably 2010-ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So there, even for Hope, this now a well-established organization in the ministry space, an organization that from a marketing communications perspective is very highly looked up to. In those early years, there was a lot of innovation and trying things and failing fast and learning along the way. It wasn't just like this massive success off the get-go. Right. Talk to me about your experiences in business and running your companies and the need for innovation, the need to learn quickly, and what you learned in that process in your business side that you were then able to apply to Hope.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, we really do feel like even from the beginning and even today, we try to look at ourselves as an uncharity, not a charity, because of the way we, you know, just think through allowing God to use the gifts that he put in the hands of the families we serve, instead of, you know, giving them something or coming in as the savior. We're partnering with them and unlocking and enabling them to grow and develop the skills and talents and abilities that they already have. But yeah, I think the, like you, I think very entrepreneurially. And when we were looking for ways to grow the organization, we looked at Hope, similar as the way we looked at Keystone Custom Homes, in what's a sustainable model. You know, what are some things that we can do to have this leveraged and grow? And that's what I love about, you know, the microfinance model. It allows, not only it's healthy for the recipient and, you know, the partner of the family, but it's also, it's a great sustainable model to, you know, have that, those dollars that you're investing continue to grow and multiply. So those are some of the things. I mean, I think of other areas where just taking good care of people, making sure that you have the best possible folks in the best possible seats, you know, good to great Jim Collins, best people in the bus and you know, all the folks in the right seats. I think some of those principles, customer service, you know, really listening well, Stephen Covey, you know, habit five, seek first to understand, then to be understood. What do the families we are serving really want? You know, what are they looking for? And what can we do slightly better? What can we change? What can we shift? What can we improve? So there's a lot of those principles apply whether you're building a home building business or, you know, global nonprofit.
Yeah. Talk to me about once you started the microfinance strategy, small savings loan stuff. You said in around 2010, right? So I mean, you've been around for a while as Hope International at that point.
Yeah.
What were some of the challenges as you guys started to apply that strategy, and maybe some of the things that you learned in the early years of developing that?
Yeah. Well, initially, and we didn't invent savings groups. Savings groups have been around a long time. And for those of listeners, just to describe, you know, a savings group is probably the best way for me to describe it, is just to give you a quick example, and then I'll explain some of the challenges that we ran into. But my family and I had a chance to go to Zimbabwe, actually, I want to say 2012, 2013, and met Jane from Epworth, Zimbabwe, right outside of Harare, the capital there. And Jane had been able to get involved in a savings group. I think they called themselves the Famous Club. They're just like, the names they come up with are just amazing to me. I always get a smile. I get a kick out of the names at that. But Jane was saving 15 cents a week. And a lot of people will say, how was she getting 15 cents a week? Well, she was working in gardens. She was cleaning, you know, houses. She was doing whatever she could to save 15 cents a week. And she was putting that into a savings group as a part of the Famous Club savings group. And they would get together once a week, put her 15 cents in. Others would put their 15 cents in. Eventually, after many months, she was able to borrow. She had $20 saved. And she was able to borrow $60 from the group, from the pot, you know, from the kind of the savings and credit association. And so she bought chickens. She bought 100 little peeps, and she grew them to 13 weeks. She had learned through the work portion of her savings group. So again, it's the welcome, worship, word, work, and wrap up. They prayed together, worked together, and saved together. And she was able to do really well on the chicken business. She raised them to 13 weeks, and she would sell them. She would sell the chickens and then buy a new batch of 100 peeps. And she grew that. And by after a couple of years, she had become very successful in the chicken business, which never would have happened without this, you know, the Famous Club savings group. So she went from survival to success But then I love when we were there in January, she had just finished giving out to 13 widows in her community there. Very, very needy community of Epworth, Zimbabwe. 13 bars of soap, which is, if you're familiar with that area, soap is a bar of soap is very much a luxury. And she had found 13 widows there in that community and was able to give out 13 bars of soap. So really became significant in her community, right? She went from survival, the cleaning homes and gardens, to success, you know, as a chicken farmer, to now she's significant in, you know, she's a, you know, a philanthropist, you know, giving out 13 bars of soap to 13 widows in her community. So that's the thing we love about the savings groups is, and Peter does, you know, a great job of really talking about all the areas of the world that we get into, the Roma people in Ukraine, in Western Ukraine, the Batna people in Burundi. These are some of the poorest places in the world. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to the poorest communities in those poorest areas of the world. And those are the areas that these savings groups really thrive much better than a microfinance group would, because you don't have there's not the risk, there's not the potential to, you know, have a default on a loan, and you're talking about much lower numbers. So that's how the savings groups work. The one of the challenges I think at that time, Zach, was a lot of our constituents and, you know, especially our major donors had really bought into the microfinance model. And, you know, sustainability, we were preaching, you know, sustainability, you know, gets paid back. You give us $100. It's, you know, we have $20 for overhead, but guess what? $80, $20 for overhead, $80 gets paid back. So the second year we have another $80 to go help another family. So you've helped now $160 worth of program on how much initial donation? $100. So what's your return? You know, so it's 160% return on that $100 just in year two. Think about that, you know, multiplying over years and years and years.
Exponentially.
Exponentially. So we had really talked a lot about that. So now all of a sudden we're talking about savings groups with really, really low amounts of dollars per group. And it's just a completely different message. So we found some folks really got it, like, wow, this is going to be so much more effective for that whole fragile fringe community, like the Janes of the world that I just described. But then, you know, what about the, you know, we were just getting comfortable with this whole microfinance model. Now we're talking about something else. So we do both, and I'm not sure what the percentage is both ways, but I know we have a large amount of, like I said, over 14,000 churches are now facilitating and, you know, working alongside these, it's like your small group in your church, only in addition to meeting and praying and fellowshipping, you're also saving together.
Well, the cool thing about that story is not only did she get to the point where she could provide for her family, but she was able to be generous within her community as well. Like it beyond just thriving, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me about how you guys integrate faith and faith-based principles into economic development.
Yeah. So it's, it goes back to I love using real life examples. It goes back to the two Muslim women in Kigali, Rwanda. That's probably just the most tangible explanation where, you know, it's an incredible platform to use, because, you know, most of the places in the world that we work, there's a huge hunger for economic development. So if we have a platform that can also, along with that, give an opportunity for families to grow, not just come to Christ, but then to be discipled and grow together, I feel like it would be such a waste to not have that be a part of. And that's why we, you know, we made from the beginning, we did not just want to help, you know, people financially. We wanted to come alongside them at whatever area they were, very relationally, you know, lead them to Christ, and then also, you know, have a format to by which they can be discipled. And I think I believe that this concept, and it's, you know, it's not anything to do with me, but I believe this concept is helping families that wouldn't darken the door of a church. Mm-hmm. But they will come to a savings group, or they'll come to a microfinance group, and they end up getting loved in, and it's just a great way to, you know, reach people for the gospel that may not have been reached before, and continue to grow. And there's been such amazing, encouraging development and stories that come back that encourage us, you know, and mm-hmm. the way that these families are growing in their faith and, you know, going through COVID, some of the things that they had to deal with in some of the parts of the world that we're talking about, you know, in the Philippines and different, the different countries in Africa that we work, where all the hardships that they went through and just prayed through those times. And it was humbling to hear, you know, we'll hear on a call or go on a trip and hear about how these small groups are praying for us. And it's just like, it's really cool to see how God has used the Christ-centeredness of what the team at Hope International incorporates into everything we do to really, you know, minister to families all over the world. And it's pretty cool to see how God works through it.
Yeah, it's amazing to see what happens when you step into need, step into crisis, and the doors that get opened when we, you know, there's word and deed. Oftentimes we kind of lean into and focus so much on word that the deed aspect gets forgotten. Mm-hmm. And when you step into need and lead with that, the doors that open up for the word piece of the call is really cool. Well, Jeff, I want to make sure that we take a moment for today's sponsor, but when we come back, I want to continue our discussion.
Awesome.
Hey, ministry leaders. Today's episode is sponsored by Click Nonprofit. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money or marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results page and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com. to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Growth Show when you sign up and get 20% off your first 3 months of management. Hey, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Jeff Root, CEO of Keystone Custom Homes and founder of Hope International. Jeff, as we get back into the conversation, I want to talk about and hear maybe some stories of the large-scale impact that you guys are seeing in countries like Rwanda or Dominican Republic or the Ukraine, where you guys started, on a larger scale, maybe from a 30,000-foot view. Now that you guys have been doing this for so long, what's some of the impact that you're seeing on some of those larger scales?
Yeah. So thank you, Zach, for that question. I do think in terms of, you know, big picture, you look at, you know, the, like I mentioned before, we're in 27 countries now. We've raised about $280 million, but have invested over $1.7 billion. But that's mostly in very small loans, you know, very tiny loans. Starting average loan size is between $200 and $300, you know, starting as low as $20. And I really do think it comes down to those individuals that are having their lives changed. I think of, you know, our family was in Zimbabwe and Zambia this past January and February, and we got a chance to to visit with some of the savings groups out in Macha and Mamba, Zambia, and got a chance to visit with, I believe it was in Macha, we were visiting with Jacqueline and Perry, who just, we were in one of their savings group. I think they were called the Amen Savings Groups, Savings Group. And they said, Jacqueline said to us, "You have to come and see my house. It is so beautiful." And it was beautiful. We got a chance to see it. We walked through the neighborhood to her house, and she had gotten a small loan after saving $3.70 biweekly. She was able to get a small loan. I think her first loan was around $20, and she got a series of $20 loans and built that home brick by brick. Mm. And, you know, put a tin roof on her home so that it didn't leak, and a concrete floor. It was a beautiful home. So to me, those individual impact stories are what makes the biggest difference, because it was her home. She had saved for it. It wasn't this huge humanitarian aid, governmental like project.
Handout.
Yeah, handout that created, you know, that, like I said before, appreciation, anticipation, expectation, and dependency. There was no entitlement there. It was like dignity, just oozing with dignity. One of the, to back to your question, one of the early days examples of this is, and you can't make this stuff up. So one of the first loans that we had given out was to a guy who was selling pantyhose at a little like farmer's market stand, just to, you know, make a living. Mm-hmm. And he really, like, this guy was very driven. He was very entrepreneurial, very good business person. He ended up becoming, he grew and grew and grew. He ended up becoming the largest pantyhose distributor in the country of Ukraine, 50 million people. So now you don't see that everywhere. A lot of folks have, they'll get a small loan. They'll get put enough resources together to send their kids to school to break that cycle of poverty. Mm-hmm. And they're good. You know, they want to get to a certain, they're not looking to be the largest pantyhose supplier of Ukraine. I do know there's a lot of, right now in Ukraine, speaking of Ukraine, you know, of course, you know, with the current war and invasion, a lot of dysfunction and destruction happening, mm-hmm. but our portfolio is actually larger than it's ever been in Ukraine over 27 years. Partly because there's the banking system, you know, the government backing of banks has been, it's a broken system right now, understandably. Mm-hmm. So there's so much need. We have a lot of farmers, open field farmers, dairy farmers that have grown substantially over those 27 years. What we see happening there, Zach, is the economic engine works the way it's supposed to. So that dairy farmer will end up hiring several other families in their community, or the coffee farmer in Rwanda, or coffee washing stations that we've come alongside of and given loans for, will grow, and they'll employ others. They'll end up impacting so many more families. Mm-hmm. We do have basically three types of programs. So we have the savings groups that'll be like at the kind of the bottom of the economic pyramid that'll help the most people on the fragile fringe. And then you have the middle microfinance. So I would say $200 to $2,000 loans. And then you have what we call the small and medium enterprise loans that'll go much higher depending on what the needs are, what we see as the potential. Can they get a loan somewhere else? You know, if they can, that's awesome. Go do it. Go talk to a bank. Mm-hmm. We're not a bank. We're here to be a banker to the poor. We say we want to be a banker to those where the paved road ends. And mm-hmm. we want to help those families. But there's some places like Western Ukraine right now where we're able to come alongside some large businesses. We have a restaurant that we're helping support. The guy has two or three locations, And after the war, it was just everything was, you know, destroyed, no power. It's hard to run a restaurant without power. But he was able to get, because he was a previous client and he had connections with a lot of our team there, he was able to get loans for generators for all his restaurants. And he rebranded his restaurants to be called Bunker Burgers and Ribs. And so, and it was just like, okay, it was kind of ooze the mentality of the community there. So there's just, those are just a couple examples. I will say, please pray for the folks in places like Ukraine and Haiti right now. From everything that we've heard from the field, the ministry is thriving there more than ever. You know, God doesn't waste a crisis. Using these situations to bring people to himself. In Haiti, we have a lot of our savings group. I think there's around 17,000 members of our savings groups and small savings groups all over Haiti that are still thriving, even amidst the extreme violence and destruction and, you know, gang rule of the streets. There's so much good happening.
That's cool. You talked about, I don't know if you'd call them or classify them as tiers, but the different tiers of loans, different sizes, like your small loans, medium size, and the larger ones. Do you find individuals like you, like myself, that are entrepreneurial driven, you know, that's a small percentage of the population. How often do you guys find that people that once they get out of that poverty line and their families are provided for, that they don't necessarily want to continue build their little businesses like the pantyhose guy or like the chicken farmer? Like, they're just good with where they're at because now their family's provided for. They can put their kids in school and they know they've got a next meal on the table. Like, what percentage of people actually end up wanting to go and build their businesses so that they can grow to be and have impact beyond just their immediate families?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would probably be a similar, you know, cross section if you looked around your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a certain percentage of folks that are going to say, yeah, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some others that have been super successful that we've been able to say, you know what, you have a really strong balance sheet. And actually, this particular region of the world is stable enough that you can now go to a bank. Here's a bank that will give you a loan. And that's good because that frees up capital for us to go help someone else in need.
Jeff, I want to pivot a little bit in the conversation. One of the things that I think that makes you in particular so unique is the fact that you have donated a massive percentage of your business to this. Can you talk a little bit about, I don't know if it was a call, if the Lord woke you up in the middle of the night, like what spurred that on and how has that process been for you guys?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to go around it, but to make a long story short, yeah, my daughter actually sent me a YouTube video from Generous Giving conference that Alan Barnhart was speaking at. And he was talking about the fact that he had donated his $250 million crane company to the National Christian Foundation Charitable Trust. And I thought when I got it at the time, it was probably 2015-ish. I thought, that's nice. He's a little crazy, but that's nice, you know. But there was a lot of things that happened. My wife, Sue, of almost 44 years, about 8 years ago, was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And given a 4% chance of surviving 2 years. Now, praise God, she's cancer-free and a walking miracle today. But around that same time, my father was killed in an accident. There was a lot of things that happened that really kind of caused me to think through my own mortality. And I remember thinking back to that video and thinking, you know what? Life is really short. And I've always believed in do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going. And I obviously am passionate about the work that Hope International does. And, you know, there's a lot of other ministries we're passionate about as well. And started looking into and praying through this a whole idea with our family of donating 89% of the non-voting stock in Keystone Custom Homes and all its affiliates. So We papered that on March 9th in March of 2019. And yeah, it was a lot of people said, did that feel like this huge change in your life, this shift? And it, you know, we woke up the same way the next morning. It really didn't feel any different. It felt a little more clarifying, like, okay, everything we do, you know, we build about 500 homes a year, Keystone. Now we just started a division about 2 years ago in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we built PA, Maryland, and Charlotte. And we're just excited to make profit for purpose. You know, every home we build is a dream home that invests in a dream, in the dreams of the families we serve around the world. So it's been exciting. It's more complicated than I just explained it, but
right.
It's basically, you know, our company is 90% owned by charity, but we get to control it and run it just like a normal business. You wouldn't know it from the outside. It looks like a normal business, but it continues to build the kingdom. Instead of, the only downside is I can't pull those dollars out personally. I mean, I'm no Mother Teresa. I could, you know, I have 3 meals a day, a roof over my head, transportation, clean water. It probably means there's no jet for Jeff, but I probably wasn't going to buy a jet anyway. I still own my 2007 Camry that has just turned over 329,000 miles. I probably wasn't going to buy a jet anyway.
Yeah. That you mentioned the control piece. So because you have ownership over the fund with NCF, you still have complete control on where that money goes. It's just all, it's all committed to charity and philanthropic work.
Right. So we can't pull it out personally. We can. So it's a DAF. It's like if you think of a donor advised fund, it's just like a big donor advised fund. And we get to continue to operate the business with inside of it as we grow the equity of the charity. We give out of there. We grow the business. We just can't pull it out personally.
So it didn't affect how... any control over the business. There's right. Not anybody coming in and taking control over what you guys are
that's
doing
right.
with Keystone.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, and just to get to be able to play and spend so much, probably more time in ministry endeavors, not just what you're doing with Hope, but all the other organizations and ministries that you love and invest in and are generous with, you get to spend more time figuring out, all right, what can we do strategically with all these other organizations that we love?
Yeah. Yeah. We're loving it. We're loving it. Yeah. We're just feeling like we get to blow the lid off of anything that we thought was possible. We're getting to do so much more, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's still crazy challenges and problems and issues dealing with, you know, permitting and approvals and codes and all the normal things that you run into in a business. But it's really gratifying to know that, and clarifying to know that, it's the purpose is really strong, and it unifies our team as well. Our Keystone team, as they know, there's a bigger vision. It's not just looking to have the owner buy a jet or buy a, you know, nicer car or ski lodge or a yacht. This is actually going to help people who truly deserve it.
And how much do you get to take some of that storytelling from what's happening and what God is doing through Hope and inject it into your teams at Keystone and share what God is doing within that kingdom-minded business?
Yeah. They get to hear it all the time. Probably they would say, enough. We actually have a company meeting Monday morning. We have about 175 employees, and we'll be all together. And sometimes I'll hear after the meeting, was that a building company meeting? Or was that a meeting about the charity? <Yeah. laughs> So that's, I try awesome. To keep a good balance. Yeah. But it's exciting to even on that level, from a ministry standpoint, it's exciting to draw the families that are building the homes and are part of the Keystone team into doing things that they may or may not have had an opportunity to do and change lives around the world.
That's cool. Well, Jeff, I want to make sure I'm respectful of your time. So let's wrap up. If people want to get a hold of you, learn more about what you're doing with Hope, learn more about Keystone, how can they get a hold of you and learn more.
Yeah, well, check out our website at Hope International, hopeinternational.org. Keystone is keystonecustomhome.com, or you could email me, jeff@keystonecustomhome.com.
Awesome. Can I pray for you as we wrap up?
Please.
Father, I thank you so much for Jeff and his willingness to come on the show and share the stories of all the amazing ways in which you're working through him and his leadership team and the entire Hope Hope International team, this incredible ministry. Father, thank you for the transformation that you're doing in real people's lives. Father, I pray that you would bless him and his team, that they would continue to have impact for your kingdom, Lord, as they pursue you and seek you and follow after you faithfully. We love you. Thank you that we get to be a part in partnership with you in this redemptive work. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Jeff, amen. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Zach. Looking forward to hearing more of your podcast. I'm going to check it out and awesome. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Growth Show. If you've enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and review us on your favorite podcasting app, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story or expertise to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be a great guest for the show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at podcast@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry's story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org and book a call today. See you next time.